Good morning, folks. Hope you're having a great Friday. We're at 1322 24th Street at Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. If you have any questions about generators, how they work, how you go about looking at what's right for your home, this is a place to come today. We're out here. They have food. They have drink. They have all kinds of things. They have a live demonstration trailer that you can walk into and you can touch it, feel it, see it. Work through the process, gain a better understanding of as to how this works. Craig has left nothing to chance. He wants to make sure that you leave here fully informed about everything, full transparency, and that's what I love about him. And he's always concerned about the customer leaving happy. And I can tell you, he made my life real happy when he took over control of my generator, because I'm an idiot when it comes to all of that, and so I just hand over the keys and let him handle it, and it has worked well. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We will visit with Dr. Melissa Roussel, principal of St. Therese Academy. That's the old St. Mary Magdalene School. That's where they're located, and they have their third annual Phoenix Fest Car and Bike Show tomorrow. We'll talk about that. U.S. Representative Troy Carter joins us about he and some bipartisan support, a letter to the House and Senate Appropriations Committee looking for a robust and comprehensive supplemental appropriations bill relative to storm relief. So we'll talk to Representative Troy Carter, who was just recently reelected, and congratulations to him. Andronika Morris joins us at 11:30. Housing NOLA. We know that this 2% of the city's general fund initiative passed. It will be in the city charter. We'll talk about what they hope to accomplish there. U.S. Congressman Steve Scalise joins us, and we'll talk about the election on Tuesday. Still waiting to see where we are with the House of Representatives. Yes, it is Friday. Yes, it is 3 days after the election. And yes, they are still counting votes. And we still don't know the outcome. Yes, we can put a missile up in the air or a rocket up in the air. And yes, we can bring it back and land it. But no, we can't seem to engage in simple math and figure out how many votes have come in and not. So we'll talk to Representative Steve Scalise when we come back. I don't know about you guys. It's Friday, and I was hoping this was going to be over with Tuesday. Okay, Wednesday. It's Friday. It's still not over with, and I think we're going to be hearing about this through the weekend as well. Mike Haas joins us, voice of the New Orleans Saints. Saints versus Falcons preview, new head coach. We got rid of some players. A lot of things happening out there at the Saints camp, and certainly no dull moments out there. A lot of things, moving parts, a lot of things going on, and we'll see what comes to fruition this Sunday as the Dirty Birds come to the Caesars Superdome. And it's rare that the Saints lose to the Falcons twice in 1 year. We're one down with the Falcons, so we'll see whether or not we can keep that going where we at least finish 1-1. All right, joining me now is Craig Jacquemine. He is the man here at Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, always on the move, always trying to improve everything that they do. He and I have conversations periodically about management philosophies, policies, this, that. And he's just a fun guy to talk to because he's always thinking out of the box. And it's always about making his customers happy first and foremost, and then his employees as well. And that's what I love about him. He's always thinking about others, and we certainly appreciate that. Craig, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Noel.
So, Craig, exciting news. You purchased Gen South, quadrupled the number of parts. You've got a bunch of folks that are here servicing. I walked into your warehouse. It looks like the same from the outside, and when I walked in the inside, I'm like, oh, my God, they added a whole nother floor.
Yeah, we added floors. We added more racks. We've done a lot, added a parts counter. You know, you see the TV right there. I mean, we're able to pull up parts. If a customer walks in, is this the part you want? You know, we use that TV for in the morning before we go out to each job. We review every job. But prior to going out there, lots of pictures. Prior to jobs. So, I mean, we take a lot of pride in what we do, as well as, you know, we address customers' concerns. Because, look, every home, every job has its own unique challenge. And the goal in that is to make sure that challenge is met, and we make the customer happy. You know, so that's what we aim for every time.
So I know, we come through this hurricane season. We had a couple of chances to test our equipment. And by the way, mine worked perfectly, flawlessly, without any issue at all, which makes me very, very happy. It's one of the few things in my house that works flawlessly. and without any problems at all. So we're having a little bit of a technical difficulty here. Hold on one second. Okay, much better. So we were excited about that. Able to talk to a number of friends that you put in generators for as well. They work flawlessly too. But with that in mind, what do you hear mostly from folks that come to you that maybe with other vendors are contemplating things, or they talk to their neighbors about issues that they have?
So the biggest thing is communication, right? And look, we're always looking to improve our communication process. We put new systems in where, when we schedule an appointment, the homeowner immediately gets a text message with the date, the time, and who the technician will be arriving at their home, whether it's installation, electrical service. So that's part of what we're improving. And that's what we hear a lot of. It's more of a security thing, because when we send someone over to the home, there's a picture of the technician that's coming over. And at the end of the day, these technicians that come out, they're going to be with that homeowner probably for the next 10 plus years, So it's kind of like the Dave the Linux guy, right?
Yeah.
That type of thing where, you see the same technician. That's what we want to do. We treat our customers like their family. We don't put one customer above another. I mean, we treat everybody equally. One thing that we noticed that when we bought Gen South was that they weren't really up to our where we were at as far as the warranties, the remote monitor on these generators. So that was a little bit of a challenge. Look, when we bought Gen South, the day of Hurricane Francine, that's when we actually were moving the material over to all the parts and everything from the original location of Gen South over to us the day of the hurricane. So I mean, 5, 6, 7 o'clock, we were just leaving the shop. And, the next day is when we started getting an influx of phone calls. And when those calls came in, we didn't even know who our customers were yet. And one of them was Langenstein's, the grocery store, we met with them, and we actually just swapped the generator out for them. We did it last Friday. So we swapped the generator out for them for their grocery store. What we were told was that the fact that we are communicating with that customer, they call, we answer immediately, we have 24-hour service, so being able to offer those services that, not knocking the company before, but at the same time, they had little challenges as well. Now, when it came to purchasing Gen South, that's where I started at. I used to buy all my parts, because I wasn't a Generac dealer, I was just an installer, right, a technician. So I would go there and buy my parts and buy generators, right? And one of the ladies, Miss Erin, worked there for 16 years, and she left there 2 years ago to come work with work for us. And we were only open for 2 years. And I would always tell Miss Erin, "Hey, Miss Erin, one day we're going to own Gen South. We're going to own that company. It's going to be ours one day. You took the chance to come over to us. We're going to own that company one day." And when the opportunity was available, I jumped on it. The thing is with Gen South, people don't realize that this company has been crucial for the last 18 years in the New Orleans metro area as far as generator parts, having the parts not only available for residential, but for industrial and commercial generators as well. And they were known for parts. That was one thing they were known for. So if that company just kind of went away when we'd have a hurricane, you would feel it. No one would really probably know it was Gen South that was, gone and, hey, we can't get parts. It's going to take 2 weeks. Now they can have parts immediately. I mean, the day of that, the day of Hurricane Francine, we got a phone call from a Gen South customer, and was forwarded to us. And Christian, our field coordinator, and I were literally in rain. We got a video of it. And we're laughing because it was, I haven't been out there in the field in a while, but we were literally out there soaking rain. I had a guy call. He says, "Look, Craig, whatever you can do, I'm in trouble." I said, "What's going on?" He says, "Well, I'm in Vegas, and my wife's at home, and the generator's out. And I'm in trouble."
Yeah, that's trouble. Sure.
So I said, "Let's see what we
can
do."
Been there before I met you. Done that.
Yep. So on the way back to our home, Christian and I, stopped at this customer's house and was a bad battery. Swapped the battery out. I mean, and look, that right there is the reason why I'm in this business. You know, it's when you see, you know, the satisfaction. Look, Drew Brees, love Drew Brees. He won, you know, won a Super Bowl. But if it came to Drew Brees and your house getting power on, they're going to pick us over Drew Brees.
Ain't no doubt about
so,
that.
So you have that feeling of accomplishment. You know, when you see a family walking outside and they got power on their home and they're thanking you. I mean, it's like you're the superhero. You know, and that feeling you can't. It's hard to replicate. You know, and that's reminding me of why I do this and why I wake up every day. You know. So.
Now the one thing about generators, not unlike a lot of other pieces of equipment, some of the most significant advances are kind of the stuff around the generator, right? Mm-hmm. The monitoring of
yep.
it. You've already gone through a couple of iterations of improvements. You've brought all your customers up to
yep.
the most recent level for that very purpose, because there's more you can monitor. There's more notifications, more seamless operation. That's what I love about it. I
yep.
mean, you know, y'all know what's going on, and y'all tell me something about it before I even recognize it.
Yeah, and that's the advantage of having the monitoring service, right? So on our industrial generators, you know, with our Generac generators, we stay with Fleet. But then when we go into the industrial world, commercial, and other brands besides Generac, whether it's Kohler or Briggs & Stratton or, you know, or Texan or whatever, we use a new system called OmniMetrics. And that system is really good because, you know, when we're dealing with nursing homes and other type of medical facilities, there are certain reports that the fire marshal is looking for. And being able to, we can actually toggle the reports that the fire marshal is looking for. Fire marshal shows up, you know, for an inspection. You know, if they can't find the paperwork, they can go straight to OmniMetrics and print this out. Or we can print out, or we can, you know, have that and actually email it to the customer
to
immediately.
Them, right.
Yeah, so there is an advantage of that. But then also, what I like to do, and you know, most people call me crazy when I say this, is it avoids call-outs, unnecessary call-outs, right? And, you know, people think, well, I'll get a call-out. Call-outs are never good, number one, because it's usually you're on one side of Louisiana, it seems like, and somebody else is on the other side. You get a call-out, right? And, you know, we're able to do troubleshooting with that homeowner and kind of have them go out and be the eyes and ears in the field for us. And what that does is sometimes, look, it can be as simple as just a toggle switch that's off on back in the generator. It's a remote kill switch, right? And sometimes, you know, kids will bump it or somebody's cutting grass, they bump. Sometimes a switch will go bad, right?
Right.
But we can have a homeowner go out there and we can walk them through something simple and say, okay, you're back up and run it. We see it on the screen. You're good to go. Green light's on. Yep, okay, you're good. That'll avoid $175 call-out fee, you know,
right.
And that's what we want to avoid. We don't like call-outs, I'm going to be honest with you. And that's where the advantage of having the system in, because, you know, the average cost to monitor the year is like $99, right? Think of a call-out, it's $175.
Right, yeah.
So, and we work with these homeowners with that. You know?
A great ROI. It is a piece of equipment at the end of the day,
yep.
right?
Yep.
You never know when things are going to happen, but the stronger the relationship between you and the customer, the more information I can pass about what to expect with the utilization of your generator is incredibly important. And
yeah.
people develop a comfort level. I know I have.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, look, it's as simple as just going out there and checking the oil on these machines, right, or changing oil, right? We want educated homeowners. Educated homeowners are our best friend, you know, because if you have a homeowner that can – go out there, check the oil, change the oil. That's one less person that we have to focus on, where we can focus on, you know, other repairs for other people, you know, and that's what we like to do, you know, and you know, we have a bunch of information, even from the initial installation, from the sales, when the salesman goes out there, we have a folder, and that folder is just chock-a-block with information from financing to, you know, how do you determine what size generator, we have a top 10 questions pre-sale, top 10 post-sale. We have training videos. And we give that all to the homeowner prior to that, is that way that they have this information, you know. And then when the job's done and we go to do the startup, the technician does a very thorough walkthrough with the homeowner so that they understand the machine. They understand the limitations of this machine. And that way, this machine's just not a piece of metal that's sitting out in the yard that they don't understand and how to use. We don't want homeowners afraid, or we don't want homeowners not to understand how to use that machine. You know, so.
Craig, how important is the size of the generator? I mean, I think a lot of people probably purchase a generator and they just go get the biggest one that they can afford.
Yeah, that's actually not good. So, you know, you want to see a generator. We try to get the generator sized up to about 80% of the capacity of what that generator is rated for. And what that does is that it allows any type of, you still have a 20% in there. So if something starts up suddenly or something turns on that's normally, you know, if it overamps a little bit, you have that room so it doesn't shut down the generator. Now, the next thing is that, you know, when it comes to, like, diesel generators, you know, too big of a generator actually causes what they call a wet stack, right? And that's where, you know, you start seeing the generator kind of act silly. You know, it's not running right. It'll run right for a while, but eventually over time, it's not going to be able to push out all the exhaust, and it's called a wet stack, and you start seeing the black smoke come out, even right. though you might have Defen Air, you know, to actually clean up the diesel exhaust. It still will bypass that because it's too much soot and stuff. So having the generators too big can be a problem too. So every unit that we sell, we do a load calculation. So that load calculation is submitted. Now, some parishes want the load calculation and some don't, but every generator we sell has a load calculation on it. And we always tell the homeowner, look, if you know everything you agreed upon as proposal, you know, as far as running, if you know, you want to run the oven, you want to run the dishwasher, you want to run the entire home, you know, three air conditioners or whatever you want to run, whatever is in that load calculation, we guarantee that generator will be able to run. If it doesn't, you know, our motto is that, look, we will give you the next size up at absolutely no additional cost on us, right? You know how many times we've done that? None. Right. So that's how confident we are in with the products that we sell. And it's not just selling Generac. It's selling other brands as well. And that's one thing that, you know, we actually have the industrial side. So we have Gen South, but we also have Craig's Industrial Generator Service. And the industrial side allows us to sell other brands besides Generac. You know, we sell Texan, we sell High Power, we sell Gillette, we sell Kohler, we'll sell Briggs & Stratton. So it gives us more options on the other side because, you know, with Craig's Electrical, that is a wholly Generac business right there. It's right. You know, so we stay with that because of co-op dollars. But we, you know, we've seen that we need, once we started being able to offer options, our business just really took off, you know. Yeah. And you know, our customer base even started growing, you know, because you get kind of limited on different type of brands of generators where someone wants a certain brand. And if you're not able to offer that, but what we started noticing was that they would go get another installer to put this whatever brand they wanted, and then we would take over the maintenance. Right. We'd take over the generator after it was installed. And I said, you know what? That's not really good. Let's start going with options. And so far, it's been successful. Like, I brought you over to our industrial side, and you've seen that board that's sure. full of jobs, you know, absolutely. All over. And, you know, one of the jobs we won, which was, you know, we won a $500,000 job with the Louisiana Supreme Court, right? And that's one of the biggest jobs that we won, and that's putting a Kohler in. Right. So being able to be flexible and being able to install these different type of units, that's what we do.
Absolutely. All right, we got to get to a break. 504-260-1870. We're at Craig's Electrical and Generator Service at 1322 24th Street. They're ready, folks. If you want to come on out and ask some questions, they've got their live trailer set up. You can see how generators actually add up, and you can also enter to win two tickets to the LSU game on November the 9th and the Saints game on November the 10th, which is tomorrow and Sunday. LSU versus Alabama, Saints versus the Atlanta Falcons. Come on by. You can win a couple of tickets to that as well, and also eat and drink. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are here at Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. You just heard the whole menu of items that they have here. And come out and try to win the tickets to the Saints-Falcons, LSU-Alabama, right here at Craig's Electrical and Generator Service at 1322 24th Street. Joining us on the line, the Mike Haas, the voice of the New Orleans Saints. Mike, I don't even know where to start. There's so much that has happened since the last time you and I spoke. It's not a chapter right. of a book. It's like the whole book.
Yeah, it was you know, all we did on Monday and Tuesday was, you know, get rid of a coach, you know, release a coach, release a first-round draft pick, pick a new president. You know, so, you know, that was Monday and Tuesday. So it's been – and then, you know, Darren Rizzi, from the second he had the job, you know, it's change. You know, not massive changes, but just – I mean, if he could change it, it was going to be changed, whether it's cosmetic or he felt – it had, you know, true value. And I think, you know, kind of rearranging the locker room makes perfect sense. And, you know, is it a to help you win a game? No. But if everybody's kind of hearing, if you're in there addressing the team and you got people scattered all around the building, it doesn't really help. So, you know, he said it when he got the, you know, was named interim, that he's just not going to hold the reins. I'm not here to just hold on to something. And if there were three games left in the season, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But there's eight. Eight. Yeah. And so it's a full half season to try to, you know, and, you know, you're a month at home. Most of your games in the finals, in the back end, are at home. So, man, but I will say, like we have said for 7 weeks, just win one. Just wait, stop, forget the eight. Let's just win one.
So this game, we've been saying this for weeks, it's a big game. The Saints rarely, it's been a long time since they lost twice to the Falcons, so they're one down this year so far. This is the game that they can bring it even. What do we expect to see from the 6-3 Falcons?
God, that's to me, that is the question, right? I mean, you know, there's a lot of Saints injuries in the wide receiver room, and, you know, who knows, you know, I feel like the key is going to be Atlanta's offense and their run game and their pass game against the Saints defense. If the Saints defense cannot stop Bijan Robinson, and they are focusing him more and more and more each week. He had almost half of their plays in the first half last week against Dallas. He touched the ball. So he is, you know, just a different focus. Now, when you look at Atlanta, well, you just look at their overall team comparison. If they're 6-3, you're like, wow, that must be, you know, and from an NFL statistical point, it must be great. They're in the top 10 in just two categories: pass yards per game, total yards per game. So they're not, they're 20, 23, 20, 20, 29. They're not like these, you know, massive teams that come in and just blow people away. They've had two games where they just have just gone and lit it up. And one of them was right after they played the Saints. So then Saints, in week four, the Atlanta offense produced zero touchdowns. And then they went to week five and played Tampa Bay, and Kirk Cousins was 42 of 58 for 509 yards, four touchdowns, and an interception. 509. They played him again, and he threw another four touchdowns. So they've beaten Tampa twice, right? They've beaten Carolina once. They've beaten us once. They're 4-0 in the division, and they're basically done, right? After they play us, they'll have one game left in the division, and that's Carolina at the end of the season, just like the Saints. Saints play Atlanta on Sunday. They're done in the division until they play Tampa in January of 2025. It's a weird kind of schedule. I don't know what the NFL was thinking, because you have some teams out there, Pittsburgh, Chicago, they've not played a division game yet. None. Zero. So the back half of their schedules are going to be all division games. And Philly and Dallas, one division game. So it's just kind of weird that the NFC South, almost all of the games will be done here in the next couple of weeks until the final week of the season. And typically those games are either hugely important or they mean nothing.
But Mike, where are we? You mentioned injuries earlier. Where are we? And let's focus on the offensive line first.
So they get back to practice anyway. They get Eric McCoy. I don't, you know, this kind of opens up a window of when, you know, there's a 21-day window from when he can kind of start practicing to where you kind of have to do something. Shane Lemieux, same situation. He has been back full practicing. McCoy was limited, so I don't think you'll see McCoy play this week. Lucas Patrick, I don't think you're going to see play. He has not practiced this week because of an ankle. We'll wait and see today. So, but I feel, even that being said, they've kind of weathered the storm a little bit on the offensive line. I feel like you could get Shane Lemieux back, and kind of he plays in place of Patrick and maybe guard or Connor McGovern or center. So I feel like it's not in great shape, but you're worse in other places. You're worse at wide receiver. You're not going to have Cedric Wilson. You're not going to have Chris Olave. Okay, so if you look at the wide receiver room for the Saints, if you in that situation, you have Marquez Valdez-Scantling. He has one reception for 5 yards. Wilson out, Olave out. Equanimee St. Brown is on the practice squad. You feel like you're probably going to bring him up. You have Jermaine Jackson, who has not had a target. He had a run. And then you have Mason Tipton. So you feel like on the practice squad they have Kevin Austin, Equanimee St. Brown, and Dante Pettis. You know, so they're kind of struggling there. When you take out an Olave and a Cedric Wilson, you're going to be looking for guys, to step up, and they haven't really had a whole lot of time playing. And Jamal Williams, you know, he's still limited. So the running back room to me, if you give me Alvin Kamara, Taysom Hill, and Jordan Mims, I'm fine, and Adam Prentice. You know, you give me, you know, I'd like to have Jamal, but I don't think he's going to be up. It's a groin injury. And so I'm not as worried about the running back room as long as you give me Alvin and Taysom. You can do a lot. But that wide receiver room, you know, it's going to be, we say this all the time, heavy tight ends because your wide receivers are just kind of banged up or somebody's got to step up. And, you know, Valdez-Scantling knows the system a little more now than he did. I think it's his third week. And so, you know, you expect more out of him. Equanimee St. Brown, it's his seventh year in the league, right? He's 6'5". He's the exact kind of target that the Saints have talked about needing. So, you know, he's still on the practice squad. I'm just moving him up because you got to move somebody.
So I know that we've also struggled a little bit with the defensive backfield. That's been an issue. Where do we stand there?
Yeah, it's kind of feast or famine. So from an injury standpoint, I mean, obviously Marshawn's gone. Kool-Aid is not going to play again. He hasn't practiced yet with his hamstring. Rico Payton is limited. He didn't play last week. So I think you'll probably get Rico back this week. And I think you'll have an opportunity to get Will Harris, who is on IR, but his window is open. He was full practice. And so you're better now than you were last week. You didn't have Marshawn. You didn't have Kool-Aid. And you didn't have Rico Payton. But man, Shamar Jean-Charles came up pretty strong. You know, they brought up Miller Bradford. I mean, it just, you know, guys that you were not anticipating playing. I mean, I never thought I would say, man, we got to get Rico Payton back. Right? Rico Payton was a stretch, I thought, back in camp to make the team. And he's a tough kid, and he's done everything you want. But I didn't think that in week 10 I'd be going, man, we got to get Rico Payton back. We got to get Rico Payton. But I really felt the DBs played pretty well last week.
What is obviously we didn't struggle offensively. We just struggled scoring points at the right time, made mistakes, and it seemed to never could get into a rhythm for whatever reason. And that's been happening for a couple of games. Any sense of, you know, what's happening there? Is it just the constant changes, not stability? You know, with players and. I don't know. It's just
yeah,
been kind
and
of...
I think you lose a lot. I think you lose Olave early, right? So you lose Olave early, and then Cedric Wilson actually got hurt in that game. So if you take them off of your board, now you're looking at Valdez-Scantling, Jermaine Jackson, and Mason Tipton. Those were your, you know, main three last week, and so you were really forced to run the ball, which they did enormously well. What killed them, in my estimation, is the first two drives, you know, the first three drives. They get down into the red zone and end up having to kick short field goals, 29 and 33. That's an extra point. If your red zone offense can punch those in and you're up 14-0, the Carolina calls it a day, right? They call it a day. They're like, there we go again. You know, another loss, you know, but you didn't. And so in the second quarter, they score a touchdown. And all of a sudden, you dominated everything, and you're down 7-6. And so this team is not good enough to squander opportunities. And so when you get down there, you've got to punch it in for 7, because that is exactly what happens, right? Now, again, they still took the lead late, but just couldn't stop when they had to. And then, you know, had the ball with a chance to go down and time to kick a field goal, but just – you know, can't, you know, then a lot of people question the play call, or who knows if it's a play call or that's Derek Carr, you know, the deep pass on fourth down. It just seemed like an all or nothing kind of play. But so they're going to have to run the ball, and they cannot trade field goals for touchdowns with Atlanta, because Atlanta has the potential to put a ton of points on the board. They don't always do it. It's feast or famine for them, but they have the potential without offense and Drake London and Darnell Mooney and Kyle Pitts, right, and Bijan, man, they can move it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. You've talked a lot about what's happened this week. I mean, there's been a lot happen. I ran into some Saints officials at a function last night. I was just kind of teasing with them. I said, nothing going on by you guys, right? It just started laughing. What do you see as the psyche of the fans right now?
Well, I think so. Well, first off, I'm glad that it's Atlanta, right? It's coming in, and it's a first-place team. They've already beaten the Saints, and so I think that helps to get kind of the fans. If this were Cleveland, right, I don't know that we'd have kind of the passion. And I think they're curious to see what it looks like. Right? It's not just a Saints head coach, you know. It's that he also called the plays defensively. So now you have Joe Woods calling the plays. Everybody kind of has to shift. So you have Joe Woods and Marcus Robertson, who they're doing the game, the pass game plan. And then you have Brian Young and Mike Hodges doing the run game. And Todd Grantham, who was kind of a defensive line coach, is now kind of in an advisory role with Joe Woods. So, you know, Joe said it best. He goes, you know what? Three deep is three deep. Cover two is cover two. But yeah. Dennis's system, he does things a little different from a pressure package than maybe I will. So I think that's the kind of subtle differences. The schemes of the schemes, you're not going to wholeheartedly come in and gut your defensive game plan, but maybe you do things differently. Maybe they do more pressure. Maybe there's a different way that they can stop the run up the middle. You know, I don't know. I think that's where we're kind of feeling like, let's see what this defense looks like, because this is the side of the football we did not talk a lot about during training camp of being problematic. It was all offense. Now, we didn't know the defensive injuries with Paulson Adebo and trade Marshawn Lattimore.
Mike, I'm going to have to interrupt you because I got to get out to a break. I just didn't realize about the clock, and I apologize. But we look forward to listening to you and Deuce on Sunday. Have a great game.
Thank you, my friend. Talk to you soon.
Okay, man. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. All right, folks, don't forget, we got that LSU-Alabama game on Saturday. Tiger fans, LSU 6-2, Alabama 6-2. They meet in Death Valley tomorrow. Our coverage starts at 2 o'clock. You can join Mike Tatilier and Herb Tyler for the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show, live from Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge, presented by MAP Construction. Always a great time, Mike and Herb. Acme has 16 surround sound TVs, great drink specials, plus life's more fun with seafood. Catch LSU pregame at 4:30. Kickoff with Chris Blair and Jacob Hester at 6:30. Tigers versus Crimson Tide. 9 hours of exciting LSU football coverage starting tomorrow at 2 p.m. on WWL. And you can pick it up on that free Odyssey app as well. We've got a lot more coming your way. We're going to visit with Steve Scalise when we come back after the top of the hour news break, as well as Andranika Morris. We'll talk about the thing that passed on the ballot initiative that passed in the city, where 2% of the budget goes for affordable housing. And we'll also visit with U.S. Representative Troy Carter, as well as Dr. Melissa Roussel in the 12 o'clock hour. Got a lot coming your way. A lot of football. Saints versus the Dirty Birds in the Caesars Superdome this weekend as well. So many things going on at the Saints organization. It's hard to keep track of it. If you'd have thought back to last week and someone said, this is what's happening next week, people would have had you committed. So, you know, none of that was anything that I thought was going to happen for sure, but it did. And we'll see what happens from here. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We have U.S. Representative Steve Scalise, who was just reelected to office, and we wish him congratulations for same. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Newell, and great to be back with you.
Steve, a lot happened Tuesday evening. I think a lot of folks were surprised by the breadth and depth of the win. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it was a historic night. Look, I mean, I got to travel with President Trump and, you know, go to some of the swing states. I was in every swing state. And you just saw the energy. You know, you had Trump rallies. I mean, Sunday I was with President Trump in North Carolina and in Georgia. And, I mean, thousands of people inside packed arenas. But there would be thousands of people outside who couldn't get in, but they just wanted to be around the event. And, you know, you just saw this, you know, kind of force of nature that, you know, President Trump was talking about real issues that mattered to people. And I think as everybody's trying to decomp and figure out how did it happen, how did Trump run the table on every swing state, seven swing states, Trump won all six that have been counted, and he's leading in Nevada, and he won the popular vote. And people that are trying to figure it out, to me, it's not complicated. President Trump was talking about the pocketbook issues that I saw everywhere I went. I've been in most states in this country in the last 2 months campaigning. Everywhere I went, people were talking about the open southern border, the high cost of food at the grocery store, the high cost of energy, and how do we fix it? And we were talking about specific things we would do to fix those problems. And the other side was talking about Nazis and racism and Hitler and, you know, and just almost insulting people as opposed to talking about how you fix the problems that are affecting struggling, hardworking families. So that's what I saw everywhere I went. I was not surprised that President Trump won, but it gives us an opportunity, Newell, to really go and solve these problems in January, and we're already focused on it. We're already planning what those first 100 days would look like in January to get our economy back on track, to produce more energy in America, which would be great for Louisiana and coastal restoration, to get regulations under control so you can, you know, run your small business without having to worry about federal agencies trying to shut you down every day, just allow you to play by the rules like every other country. Those are the sort of things that we're going to be focused on, and lowering costs for families, getting inflation under control.
Wednesday morning, I was completely mystified because I turned on mainstream media, and immediately they started with the isms, right? We were sexism, racism. And in my monologue that morning, I said it couldn't be that the general public's not ready for gender reassignment surgery for prisoners on the public dole, right? Couldn't be open border. It couldn't be public benefits for illegals that come into the country. It couldn't be the government standing between parents and their children. No, I don't think that couldn't be it. Exotic mandates that they've been issuing one after the other. Workarounds to existing law relative to student debt relief. How many times does the Supreme Court have to slap the hands of the administration to tell them you can't do this? And then, as you point out, the pocketbook issues. It couldn't be any of that. It had to be sexism and racism. And they're the ones that have been preaching to the Republicans about how divisive we are. Really?
Yeah. And again, when you go to a Trump rally, for example, and they demonize President Trump in just ways I've never even seen, he's talking about uplifting things. People were very upbeat, positive. And like I said, like thousands of people lined up outside trying to get in who knew they couldn't get in, that just wanted to be a part of it. And, you know, you talk about the issues that we were focused on. We were not just talking about what people were upset about. We were talking about how to fix it. You know, how do you secure the border? You know, when Donald Trump would say, hey, you know, all these criminals that are coming into our country illegally, we're going to deport them. Well, man, you saw the left go nuts and, oh, you can't deport people. Well, guess what? We're a nation of laws, Newell. You know, let's get back to the rule of law. Let's. For the million people we let into our country legally every year, we're the most generous nation in the world. So we're not saying we're closing down the country. We're just saying you've got to come here legally. And we're not taking everybody's prisoners from their jails, you know, which most countries are doing. They're releasing their prisoners and sending them to America, and they're committing violent crimes here against our people. This is lunacy. And the fact that the other side did not want to change that, you know, I think they paid a price at the polls on Tuesday. And so now we're going to go to work fixing those problems. And I think it's going to be encouraging to people. You saw the stock market do well, but I think you're also going to see people's pocketbooks do well too, when they're paying less at the pump and their monthly utility bills are lower. And they're seeing a more upbeat attitude when they, you know, when they deal with the problems and crime issues that are around their communities.
Well, you get to hear a lot more of what's going on. I'm curious what terms they're using for the California voters that are predominantly liberal and very progressive. In fact, in progressive L.A., they voted out George Gascon, a progressive D.A. I wonder what they're saying about those voters. And in that same jurisdiction, they overwhelmingly approved Prop 36 to retreat Prop 47. They gave all kinds of favorable treatment to the, as you pointed out, offenders of the law.
Yeah,
are they xenophobic? Are they, you know, racist? What are they?
You know, the Mark Cuban, think about the Mark Cuban comments, you know, where Mark Cuban, and I was actually, you know, it was helpful to us that he did this because it just reminded people how hateful the other side was when he literally insulted half the women in America and said, oh, gee whiz, women in America that support Donald Trump are stupid. But, well, guess what? They're not. And in fact, you know, I know Susie Wiles, who yesterday was, you know, made history by being named the first female chief of staff to a president of the United States. And she's incredibly competent and qualified. I mean, she was the co-chair of the Trump campaign. I was with her Sunday when we were going from, you know, Trump rally to Trump rally. And I've worked with Susie on a number of things. She's going to be a great asset to the Trump administration. And there's so many other qualified, competent women in Trump's orbit that have always been there, you know, and they make those kind of comments. And it just, I think they're living in such a bubble that they don't know what the real world is really like. They've been living amongst people that just talk like far left progressives from California for so long that they don't realize the rest of the world is fed up with it. The rest of the country, the smash and grab stuff where, hey, if you go into a Walgreens and you take $995 worth of stuff, you're not going to be prosecuted. Well, guess what? All the Walgreens in San Francisco shut down, so you can't even go get your prescriptions anymore, and it hurts those communities. And that was what was on the ballot. I was in California multiple times. We have a lot of races in California that we won on the ballot. But like you said, the voters of California even said enough is enough and passed that ballot initiative to say, we're going to end smash and grab. This is lunacy, and you can just go steal from any store and not get prosecuted. It's affecting everybody in that state. And they finally rose up against it and fired the DA, who was such a failure. You know, it was a Democrat who replaced him, but at least it's somebody who's going to prosecute criminals. And it's not a partisan thing. It's a common sense thing. And I think common sense prevailed on Tuesday, Noel.
Well, I'm glad to be called stupid. If stupid is raising your children and thinking that you know what your children need better than the government knows.
Right,
you can call me stupid all day long, and I'm going to wear it as a badge of honor because I'm never giving up that right. I don't care what these people say. I know my children.
They want to try to convince your kid in school to get a gender assignment surgery, and they don't want you as the parent to know about it? Give me a break. You know, that kind of stuff was on the ballot. And people, like you said, people were watching that, and they were voting based on those issues.
If I could get you, you know, I keep hearing this threat to democracy, right, issue. And it kind of wears me out because when you talk about the workarounds that they've done and complete contravention and violation of the law in so many different ways, it's almost as if those are just suggestions. That the whole Federal Register is just a collective group of words that are just mere suggestions, and we're going around it each and every day. And we talk about, you know, the other side being a threat to democracy, but we don't ever look at ourselves in the mirror critically on that side. I mean, when you look at some of what they've done and what they continue to do and what they're trying to do now already, I mean, the next day after the election, trying to do things to tie the hands of the incoming president, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's childish.
Yeah,
I mean, we're playing child games.
Yeah, this is the United States of America. But consider the source. You know, the same people that were calling Trump a threat to democracy were the people that literally shivved Joe Biden in the back and threw him in the river after 14 million Americans went to the polls and chose him as the nominee on the Democrat side to run for president. What happened to that democracy, Newell? And so not only did they get rid of the democratically elected nominee for president, Joe Biden, they replaced him with someone who never got a single vote, Kamala Harris. And by the way, there's a reason she didn't get a single vote when she ran for president, because she was unpopular. You know, I was in states like Michigan, and blue-collar workers who voted for Joe Biden 4 years ago did not vote for Kamala Harris, not because they're racist. Those same people voted for Barack Obama. So how do you reconcile that? What they had an issue with is the fact that Kamala didn't relate to blue-collar workers. Kamala Harris supported the Green New Deal, which says your taxpayer dollars should go and give a $7,500 tax credit for you to buy an EV car that's made in China instead of a fossil fuel car that's made in Michigan. And thousands of people in Michigan were laid off because of those stupid policies that Kamala Harris supported. And then she wondered why she didn't relate to blue-collar workers. So they don't want to look in the mirror and say, gee whiz, maybe it's our policies, maybe it's the Green New Deal and these things we pushed that crush American jobs and crush American workers that people voted against. So we'll just call them racist and sexist. I hope they don't listen to the American voters, because we are, and we did listen to those voters, and we laid out an actual agenda for blue-collar workers, and they responded. And guess what, Newell? We're going to deliver for those families. We're going to actually bring really good common-sense policies that will lower costs for families. You're going to pay less at the grocery store. You're going to pay less at the pump and in your utility bills. And you're going to have a secure border. You're going to have a government that starts working for you. Trump brought in Elon Musk to start looking at right-sizing and making government more efficient. How about that? You know, that's something that's been needed for decades, to make government actually work better for the people of this country instead of for themselves. It's going to be so refreshing to see those kind of reforms proposed and then brought to the House and Senate floor to pass to the president.
Steve, as an American citizen, I sit here on a Friday at 11:21, and we still have races that have not been called. We'll figure this out in less time than we did last election. But this has got to be concerning, right? I mean, this is what happens in third world countries when you can't count votes. I mean, we can put people on the moon. We can shoot a rocket in the air and have it now land back on the pad on its own. We can do all kinds of things, but we can't count ballots fast for whatever reason.
Yeah, Neil, how embarrassing and it's frustrating. And this is what breeds distrust with people. And by the way, more than half of those races that have not been called are all in, you know, our favorite state of California. You know, California seems to mess everything up, but there's no excuse for it. You know, you had problems in other states like Florida years ago, Broward County with all the hanging chads. They cleaned up their mess in Florida. And guess what? By 9 o'clock on election night, the entire state of Florida was counted. And Florida's a large state. You know, Texas, another large state, was fully counted. There is no reason why California, you know, we've still got a number of seats, and a number of them are leaning Republican right now, but they still are waiting on more precincts to count. Like, why does it take so long? Everybody should be finished on election night. There's no excuse for it. And so, you know, this is a California problem. They have a lot of problems, but just basic counting of votes is one of them. You know, I think it's another sign of how proud we should be of our state. Louisiana had no issues like that, and I think it's really a testament to the, you know, kind of elections that we run, and we make sure that everybody has their vote counted. Nancy Landry did a great job as Secretary of State to make sure that with record turnout in Louisiana, and I want to thank the voters of Louisiana not just for electing me for another term, but for showing up in record numbers, whoever you voted for. The fact that we had a record turnout and there were no issues, Newell, we had our results by roughly 9 o'clock at night. You know, that's a testament to Nancy Landry and the qualified people that don't get a lot of attention at the Secretary of State's office, working with all the clerks of our state. You know, because when you look at a state like California, where you still have all these races not counted, let's also remember a state like Louisiana that used to have problems. You know, we sent our elections commissioner to jail back in the 1990s. We cleaned up our mess just like Florida cleaned up theirs. And that's something we should be proud of.
You recognize those folks, because it really is something that we set the bar on in this country. And if more people mimic our processes here in Louisiana, we would be much better served, right?
Absolutely. And again, no reason that every state can't do this. You know, there are states that had problems, and I was in the state legislature when we confronted the problems we had. And they were, you know, they were not easy fights, but we did it. I've talked to the Florida legislators who fixed their mess, you know, after that Bush versus Gore race where they, you know, they literally had the U.S. Supreme Court need to step in and stop the foolishness that was going on in Broward County. And they finally cleaned theirs up, where now you have not only clean and fair elections, but you have the results by 9 o'clock at night. We have technology today. You can actually get this done quickly. And there's no reason for a state like California to still have all these races not resolved.
Yeah, it's just a level of incompetence that I just don't understand. And collectively, as Americans, we should be embarrassed by this. I mean, I just, and I don't know, you know, I fully embrace states' rights, and I would never want to move away from that. But, you know, at some point in time, we have to take ownership and responsibility for what we do and get it fixed, right? Execute.
Yeah,
for once.
Some sort of national standard, and having the results on election night should be part of that standard.
Absolutely. Steve Scalise, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations again on your reelection, and we truly appreciate taking time out of your busy schedule to join us this morning. Thank you, sir.
Thanks again, Newell. Great to be with you. God bless.
504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We will be right back with Andronika Morris from Housing NOLA when we return. Stay with us. That's right, folks. We've actually had some folks come by, and they've registered to win the Saints-Falcon tickets as well as the LSU-Alabama tickets. So you don't want to miss that opportunity, and you don't want to miss the food either. So come on by. I can smell it from over here. You want to come on by and visit us, and they will... they can give you a tutorial if you want about what's going on with generators and how to deal with same. All right, folks, we are joined by Andronika my papers are flying all over the place. By Andronika Morris, Housing NOLA. Andronika, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, good morning, sorry. Yeah, thank you for having us back, having me back.
It's been a long week, Andronika, and it's a Friday. It's like nothing seems to be flowing this morning. It's like it's crazy. But anyway, a big win. A big win for Leslie Harris and her initiative on the 2% of the budget being set aside for affordable housing. You and I talked about this in advance of the election, and I raised some of my concerns about how that spend would be made and what was going to be the outcome and, you know, and how real was it going to be. And we talked a little bit about that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so first of all, it's a big win for the people of New Orleans. We are so grateful to Leslie Harris, Councilwoman Harris, for her leadership, and the rest of the council for getting this on the ballot. But the people of New Orleans deserve all of the credit for this victory. And we need to listen to them very carefully, because they spoke definitively and very clearly that they heard the arguments against this, the concerns against it. And they said very clearly, we do want you to invest some of our money in our homes. And so what's next is making that real. So we have right now a budget. The city of New Orleans is going through its budget process right now. There's an opportunity for the council and the mayor's office to heed the 75% of New Orleanians who told them they wanted them to invest in their housing, and to do so starting now in this budget. There's about $60 million that the city of New Orleans is talking about appropriating in the 2025 cycle. That money needs to be clearly appropriated and invested in addressing short-term and long-term needs. And so we are going to be working with community to make sure, and our partners and the council and the mayor's office, to make sure that that budget is reflective of those values. And then we get on to next year. The advisory board will convene to talk about how to administer the trust fund dollars that are going to be available in the 2026 budget year.
So you mentioned, did you say 16 or 60 million?
$62 million is currently.
But just so we don't confuse. So we don't confuse
it. That's right. They're two different things.
It's two different things. Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
That's right. So these are programs that were created already. These were existing funds. And this is one of the reasons why we pushed back so hard against doing nothing, was that there's money there right now that needs to be administered, that needs to be clearly invested, and some of it needs to be put out immediately, and it can be put out immediately. The city has programs already, and that is what the people voted for. They said, we want this process that will add additional money and clearly lay out how it's going to be invested. So we hope the council and the mayor heed that call and follow that right now with the money that they already have. The money that they already have, the money that they need to invest. We have a crisis. There's no reason to wait. They're making proposals or how the money is going to get spent. It needs to be a mixture of immediate needs met, everything from helping people stay in their homes, helping our vulnerable seniors, our senior homeowners who are struggling with insurance, helping them stay in their homes, and as well as making investments so that we can continue to build to the standards that we need to meet.
And you're pretty confident that this is going to happen, because all of what you just said is not actually what they voted on. But be that as it may, the city had already come out and said they were going to do this anyway, whether or not this amendment to the city charter passed or not. It's just a recognition that of the 2% of the overall budget would be associated to affordable housing. I mean, they were doing this already. I know in the past.
No, so that's a good point. Yeah, that's a point of clarification that needs to be like cleared up. What they're doing now, what they've done in the past, is different. Is dramatically different from what the trust fund is. Number one, saying you're going to do something, the city in various incarnations has made commitments and has dishonored those commitments and has not made those investments in housing. And certainly not taking general operating funds. The money that we're talking about now are HUD, are largely HUD dollars that they are required to spend. It's leftover money from some older programs that they are required to spend, and they have chosen to spend them on housing. And that has not been done consistently. That's why we've been failing the last few years. Because they've not been honoring those commitments. They say one thing, and they have done something else. They have been wildly inconsistent. We have in the past, budget cycles with programs like the Healthy Homes Initiative, where the mayor introduced a budget that didn't fund a program that is critical to the city's success. That's happened a number of years in a row. That's what's been happening in the past. This is the trust fund will stop a lot of those shenanigans, because there will be money available expressly and explicitly for housing that has to be obligated towards housing. And they can no longer choose to do something else with it and pretend like they've made a commitment and then dishonor that commitment. So that's the difference. And I want to make sure that that's very clear, because the backup plan.
I'm glad that you cleared that up.
Alternative. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you cleared that up, but I'll make the following observation, and I think you'll agree with me. That's one thing. You still have to execute, right? So we've had money, FEMA money, in order to do a number of things since after Katrina, and here we stand, and I think we still got 40% of the money to spend. We haven't executed. And, you know, my whole thing is there's more than one way to skin a cat. If you want to delay, just because it's appropriated and it's in a budget cycle, it doesn't mean they're going to spend it. And, you know, we know that all too well, because we've had federal dollars, as you just pointed out, that have been available for years and years and years. And actually, we've had federal audits come in and write us up for not spending the money timely. And, you know, so we have internal problems bigger than just money, and that's, I always say you need to have the ability to receive, and you and I talked about that. And what that means is when you get the money, you got to be able to act on it. It doesn't help anybody if it's sitting in a bank account drawing interest.
That's right. That's right.
You know?
And that was also one of the big changes that we were able to get with this trust fund, with these dollars, is the groups, the city departments that are managing the housing money now, they will not be the ones administering these dollars. They will continue to focus on managing the federal dollars. And one of the things that we want to see happen is that there's more scrutiny applied to how those dollars are administered, and there's coordination. These funds are going to two agencies who have a track record of pushing dollars out the door: the Finance Authority of New Orleans and the Redevelopment Authority of New Orleans, both of whom have done amazing jobs post-Katrina getting federal funds and pushing them out the door. You mentioned the FEMA dollars. You might even be thinking about and talking about, for example, the Resiliency District in Gentilly, which the city is now, the city of New Orleans has now been moving on. The one thing that people talk about is that those dollars had multiple partners. The Redevelopment Authority was one of the partners. They got their dollars out the door years ago. Years ago. Not last year, 2 years ago. Years ago, they're part of the grants which invested in people's homes, did stormwater management projects at people's homes surrounding the Resilience District. The Redevelopment Authority got that money and got it out the door years ago. These two agencies have a track record. The Finance Authority stood up the Soft Second program that was ahead of the city's Soft Second program. They got their dollars out the door years ago. So one of the things that we talked about here, and community was very clear when there was conversation about designing this program, is we had to, in order for community to vote for it, they needed to see performance. And we could not pretend that the same actors right now who are struggling, who we need to hold them accountable, why not deputize folks who have a track record of doing this and giving them the resources to do it? And that's what's going to happen with this money. These dollars are going to, with the council's directive on the programs and the priorities, go to agencies that have a track record of pushing this money out the door.
Well, that's encouraging.
Into people's homes.
That's encouraging, yes, to hear that, because that's been a problem that we've had historically. You and I have talked about it. I've sensed the frustration in your voice many, many times about this, yeah, issue, where we talk and talk and talk, and we got the money sitting there, we don't spend, we don't implement, we don't execute, and we get nowhere fast. And meanwhile, since you and I started talking, the number of affordable housing units that we need, that number grows exponentially every year.
Correct. And that's why it's important. That's why it was important to get these resources, because we do need more money, and to make sure that we had a process that is as rock solid as you can design. It still requires oversight. It still requires engagement and accountability. And fortunately for us, there's going to be a big accountability opportunity next year as well. As the council works on this, many of them are going to be running for office next year. We will be able to hold them accountable on how they act in this budget cycle, on how they move around housing over the next few months, and how they administer, how they appropriate and designate the first tranches of dollars from the trust fund. There's going to be a built-in accountability for all of them.
And that's the best time to do it. Got to get to a break. Andronica Morris, thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Newell. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. On the text line, it says, Newell, why weren't you this strong for Trump before the election? Now that Trump won, you act like you were supportive all the time. I call BS on you. I haven't said anything positive about Donald Trump. Not a word. What I said is that the Democrats have accused Republican voters of so many things, and I was calling out them. Governor Kathy Hochul of New York referred to Republican voters as un-American if they voted for Trump. What I said is that the only way they feel like Trump won was because Republican and independent voters, because independents are the ones that decide this election, were racist and sexist. They had to pull the isms out. Racism and sexism is the only reason why Donald Trump won. They are attacking American voters because they didn't get their way. And they're asking questions like, how could this possibly happen? Really? Well, why don't you look at where you stand on issues? And maybe if you were honest with yourself and get out of that little bubble that you live in, where none of this impacts you, like crime or otherwise, because that bastion of conservative voters that live out there on that left coast, otherwise known as California, guess what they did? They retreated on a whole bunch of progressive platforms. Guess what they also did? They got rid of a progressive mayor and a progressive DA and a number of others. That's what they did. I wonder what ism applies to them. That was the point that I was making. That's not anything to say that he was any more palatable to me as a candidate. We have 4 years. I'd much rather had elected a Republican that we had the possibility of eight. I said that all along. That was one of the downsides to this. But the Republicans chose a candidate, and he won overwhelmingly. Go figure. How'd that happen? Everyone's saying, how could that possibly happen? Well, why don't you look yourself in the mirror? And as I said before, if government's going to try and stand in between me in the manner in which I raise my children and tell me that I don't know what's in the best interest of my children, that they know better than I, call me stupid, call me whatever ism you want to call me, I'll wear it with a badge of honor because I have been attempting to formulate the moral compass of my kids from the day that I adopted two children. And I'm not going to stand idly by and say nothing about that fact when they're trying to stick themselves in between me and what's in the best interest of our kids and what's going on in grammar schools and high schools and everything else. That issue alone is enough for me to tank any Democrat that's out there because they have lost their mind on so many of these issues. These are common sense issues. America's not ready for most of what they have been proposing. And they still don't get it. And they wonder why the working man who's decided that he couldn't afford to go to college and is now being called upon to pay for the education of others is pissed off. Can you believe that they cannot rationalize that thought process and gain a better understanding of why that is? But it can only be that we're racist or we're sexist. That can be the only reason. Because they are perfect. And I will tell you one thing. I'm not the center of any universe. For me, my Lord is the center of my universe, not me. And as soon as they figure out that they're not the center of any, they would be better served. We'll be right back. And if that's not enough, you can come by and get some Savvy Sliders and Fat Boys Pizza, a crazy cool new co-branded restaurant concept. Fat Boys Pizza and Savvy Sliders located at 2565 Metairie Road. Massive slices, gourmet sliders, hand-spun custard shakes. Always more to love when you go to Fat Boys and Savvy Sliders. And if you want to give a gift, they've got gift cards there, too. So you can consider that as well. Joining us on the line, U.S. Representative Troy Carter, District 2, recently reelected. Congratulations to you, Troy.
Newell, thank you so much. I'm very honored by the people of the 2nd District. Ready to get back to work, quite frankly.
Absolutely. You and some fellow Congress folks have written letters to the Senate Appropriations Committee as well as the House Appropriations Committee looking for a comprehensive disaster supplemental appropriation. And most recently, it's been reported, and Secretary Mayorkas has said, no money. Tell us about it.
Yeah, unfortunately, when we left for recess, we failed to pass a budget, and embodied in that budget was the Disaster Relief Fund, which goes to address natural disasters across the country. We know that these natural disasters are prevalent in places they haven't been before. So we have a natural strain on the dollar amounts that are there. We're still not done with hurricane season. We still have repairs and works that were being done from previous storms. And I said then, and I say now, that one of the fundamental jobs that we have is to make sure that we fund the operations of our government and to make sure that we are prepared for natural disasters, particularly given the frequency that we see them and the proximities that they're happening in that they haven't happened in before. So we sent this letter urging our speaker, urging the White House, urging Congress to fully fund the disaster relief coffers so we can address these concerns. The American people are deserving of a government that works for them, notwithstanding our party affiliations, notwithstanding whatever differences we may have within our ideological views. We must carry out those basic functions of government and making sure that our disaster relief fund is fully funded, making sure that SBA is fully funded to address the needs of small businesses throughout our country. It's just not an option in my estimate, and I'm hopeful that when we go back on Tuesday next week, that it'll be among the first things that we will do.
Troy, is it time for us to also place restrictions on this fund? It seems to me that when we make it through certain seasons of the year, there's a willingness to reprogram and repurpose some of these dollars instead of building up a fund. And then, you know, when they call upon it, you don't need to have as much money if you've got money that's accumulating in that fund. And for the secretary to say in August that there's no money, and, you know, and both sides are guilty, both sides of the aisle are guilty of doing this over the last couple of decades. Are we at that point that we should just make that sacrosanct? We put the money in there and we carry it over from year to year. If we don't spend it, it's there. And then what we put in there the following year just increases the amount available to us.
No, we are far past that period. It is the responsible thing to do to make sure that we never find ourselves flat-footed. There are enough things that we will play ping pong on within the congressional exercises. One thing we should never play ping pong with is the full faith and credit of our finances and how we fund critical functions of government. And I agree, we should, if whatever is left over should never be touched. We should continue to build on it so we never find ourselves in a situation where we are scraping the bottom of the barrel, or in this case, where we're flat broke. We know that natural disasters are coming far more frequently. They're staying far more longer than they have, and they're leaving more havoc in their path. They're also going in places we haven't seen them before. Who could have ever contemplated that the whole world would shut down with COVID? God forbid we find ourselves in another similar situation in the realm of a natural disaster, and we don't have resources. We could never have too much money sitting in a disaster relief fund, as far as I'm concerned. So your point is well taken, and it is long overdue that we should be responsible beyond parties to make sure that these funds are always fully, fully stacked.
How do you gauge this? What's your feeling? Is there bipartisan support to consider that? I mean, I think the public is all on board. In fact, they really want an all-hazards policy, you know, as it relates to flood and this and that and everything else, because of the nature of what we're facing and the cards that we're being dealt by Mother Nature.
I think the public desperately wants it. I think that there are a number of us on both sides of the aisle, Republican, Democrat, and other, who understand that these storms, these natural disasters, man, they don't distinguish race or our party or ideological differences. And we should treat it that way as well. We know that these storms and these natural disasters are real. They come in places they haven't been before, the places that hadn't been hit yet that may be next. And we should treat it as such and make sure that our resources are in place. Now, to answer your question specifically, I believe that there are a large number. I don't know that we are quite at the point of majority, but I can say without fear of contradiction, my discussions on both sides of the aisle, and I work this space pretty, pretty hard, and I work it very closely with Republicans and Democrats who similarly believe, as I do, that this is not a party issue. This is an American issue. And as we deal with storms, we deal with increasing cost of insurance, particularly this ill-fated policy of risk rating 2.0, which was designed to, quote-unquote, help Americans, has ended up doing just the opposite. Our delegation is lockstep, Republican, Democrat, to push back against risk rating 2.0 and to either through administrative means or through legislative means to modify and come up with a measure that protects the sanctity of home ownership. Many people are stuck in a position where they are faced with having to leave the home that they've paid for because they can't afford to pay the increasing cost of flood insurance in places where it's never even flooded before. So I think this is one of those issues, and I think there are, quite frankly, a lot more of these than people care to admit. And these, I mean, issues that are bipartisan in nature, that everyone benefits, Republican, Democrat, Black, white, Asian, Hispanic, regardless of your zip code, regardless of your socioeconomic status, will benefit from members of both parties coming to the table and coming up with resolutions that better the lots of all Americans. I think they're there. The members that I've worked closely with feel similarly. We just have to keep breeding that into a contagious form that we're able to benefit from it and discourage the negativity of division.
Troy, not to make this issue even more complicated, but I'm just kind of curious. There's been some chatter about reengineering DHS, especially FEMA. You know, and I know, we've stood on the streets in the aftermath of Katrina, FEMA being, for the most part, a part-time organization. Their response is very much reliant upon state and local assistance. And your thoughts about that? I know there's a lot of chatter about it. Where do you think that may go?
Well, you know, I founded the Disaster Recovery Caucus, which would give us the ability to evaluate FEMA, to evaluate DHS, to look at the functions of the antiquated Stafford Act, to determine where should modifications be done? Where can we use best practices and be more efficient with the practices of federal agencies? This falls smack dab in the middle. And by the way, this is a bipartisan caucus that I founded, made up of members of Republican Democratic Party, to address the policy side of Stafford Act, to address the policy side of the efficiencies of FEMA and DHS, to make sure that we are not duplicating efforts, we're not wasting efforts, we're utilizing best practices. And, you know, we see these storms and these needs come. There's no way we should act as if this is something new. We treat this as if, oh my God, there's a storm coming. Well, we know every year when hurricane season comes, we know how long they'll stay in those cases. We have a pretty good idea with those spaghetti forecasts where they're coming. We have a pretty good idea of the category they're coming in. And we also know what generally happens with power outages and with lack of transportation and down trees. Why do we act as if this is something new every time? So that's all a part of how do we create greater levels of efficiency to make these agencies maximized in their functions in delivering resources to the American people. This should not be something new. Unfortunately, it's not as easy as you would think, because there's some bureaucrats who say it works. Let's not mess with it. Well, I dare say it doesn't work, and it needs to be modified.
Yeah, walk a day in your shoes, right? In the aftermath of Katrina.
Yeah, that's exactly right. come down here and see and feel what we feel. You know that all too well. We've stood together too many times in the aftermath of a storm and seen the cries on people's faces and the trouble. And particularly, you know, one of the things that I've been a huge advocate is assistance for small businesses. Small businesses get you know, one SBA loan after another SBA loan after another SBA loan to stand their businesses up after a storm. At some point, you're working to pay back SBA loans when, in fact, you're doing local and state government a favor by having a business. You're employing people. You're paying sales taxes. Sales taxes pay for police and fire and roads. You know, so at some point, we have to do a better job at treating our business people, particularly when the frequency of these natural disasters are as rapid as they are, and you just can't catch up. You just can't catch up. One SBA loan after another strangles a small business.
Well, I'm sure you feel the same way I do, the folks in North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, all through that area. They're looking at 10 years, maybe 15. You know, so it's going to be a long, long journey for them, and we really hope and wish that you have much success with this supplemental appropriation, because the dollars need to be there, because without Jumpstart, every day that you lose right now, you probably lose 6 months on the back end, right? And we experienced it. And the sooner that you can get things moving there, the better off you're going to be. So we hope and wish you much success in this bipartisan effort. It needs to happen.
Yeah, there's no question. As I say to our friends, we really don't have an option. And anything short of doing fully funding the DRF and fully funding SBA is governmental malpractice.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We know you're busy. Congratulations again. I've always been very supportive of your candidacy and continue to be so. Consider you a friend, and best of luck, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you so very much. I look forward to coming back on periodically and kind of give you an update on some of the things that we talked about today and maybe some other things as we go forward with this new administration. It's time for us to, the election's over, time to move on, time to govern.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870. We are broadcasting live from Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. You want to come on out, you got a chance to win LSU Alabama tickets, Saints and Falcons tickets, and you got an opportunity to have some really nice stuff on that palette, too. So come on out. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Every year I'm very supportive of an event that goes on behalf of St. Therese Academy. It's at the St. Mary Magdalene School campus there. It's a special school for special children, and joining us is Chad Usman, a good friend of mine and also the parent of a child there. Chad, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sheriff. How are you?
Doing well, Chad. You guys have another fundraiser tomorrow, the third annual Phoenix Fest Car and Bike Show tomorrow during the day. Tell us about it.
All right, Sheriff. So our car show is to benefit our school, St. Therese Academy. It's a school for kids with exceptional learning. We try to do it every year to raise money and awareness for our school. We'll have, you know, cars, 100 cars or so out there, games for the kids, you know, some quiet time for the special kids that, you know, need that time to be quiet. So that's from 10 to 11. And from 11 on, we'll have a DJ and cars and food and all kind of fun games. And hopefully we beat the weather and everything turns out great.
And that's going to be where, Chad?
It's going to be on our campus. That's on St. Therese. It's the old St. Mary Magdalene, like you said. It's on the corner of Airline Park and West Metairie.
And so the event starts at 10 and ends when?
It starts at 10 and ends at 5 p.m., depending on the weather. Hopefully we're good with the weather. But we'll give out awards at probably about 2-ish, and we'll stay till 5, the weather permitting. But should be a good event. You know, our kids can't go to certain events because of the noise, and we try to cater to them as much as we can. We'll have some bounce houses, some games, and some activities for them to enjoy, and them to come out and see the cars, and we'll have a Kids' Choice Award car, and just, you know, a great event all around for our kids.
It's a place, it's a special place, it really is, and we always love the work that Dr. Melissa Roussel, as the principal of that school, does. and all of the parents that are completely and totally engaged in that school. It's been difference makers for our children in Jefferson Parish, right?
Absolutely. Our school is, I like to say it's in between a normal high school and a normal elementary school. But our kids, my little boy has grown so much, and I would start getting choked up if I talked too much about him. But he's went from not even speaking to speaking, and they're just, it does wonders. I mean, it's such a great place. The atmosphere at the school, the teachers are so involved. It's a wonderful place. It really is. My little boy's 8 now, and it's a wonderful place to be.
So, folks, get out there tomorrow from 10 to 5. It's on the corner of Airline Park and West Metairie, St. Therese Academy. It is the old St. Mary Magdalene campus. In fact, I went to St. Mary Magdalene from K through 5, so I'm totally familiar with it. And it's a great car show. I mean, it's a full-fledged car and bike show, right?
Absolutely. Yes, sir. And we're doing bicycles this year and motorcycles. But the bicycles, the retro bicycles from the 80s. And custom bicycles. It's a big thing at car shows. I have a car, a truck actually, and the car show community is not like none other too. They're the best giving community out there at normal car shows that we go to around town. They're so giving. That's why we do a car show.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Chad, for joining us today, and we wish you the best of luck, and I got my fingers crossed on the weather for you guys.
Exactly.
Because that's important as well, and hopefully you are able to get all the hours in. Get on out there tomorrow, folks. The third annual Phoenix Fest Car and Bike Show tomorrow from 10 to 5 at St. Therese Academy, the old St. Mary Magdalene campus. Thank you, Chad. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We are broadcasting live from Craig's Electrical and Generator Service out here. If you got a question for Craig, text it in, or he's going to come back on with us, or give us a shout. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We are here at Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. Craig joins us again. Craig, we had a couple of questions that came across the text line. First, I want to read this one statement. The text reads, I will tell you firsthand, Craig is fantastic. I called him at midnight during Ida. I wasn't a customer at the time, had trouble with my Generac generator, couldn't reach the installer that installed it. Craig quoted me a price, said he would come out and look at it. He did. He got it up and running and charged me less than the quoted price. I was back. I was up and running and going. So it's great when you get comments like that, right?
That's what I do, man. That's what makes me wake up every day excited to you know, be part of this and to be out there with the community. You know, it's one thing I've always been able to help people, but at this level, it's completely different. It's a great feeling, very rewarding.
Got a text that came in earlier. Can you ask Craig about solar power generators for whole house use?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things that's coming online on the market now. The solar power generators, it's still new to us. I mean, you have to have a battery backup system with it. And all it is basically using solar panels to, you know, store energy in the batteries, you know. So they're good except for nighttime. You know, that's when you run out of battery backup system. So those type of systems, you have to design those specifically targeted to exactly what you want because, you know, you can have an 8 to 12 hour, you know, you might have a 12 hour battery, but depending on what you use, you can shrink that down to 6 hours, you know.
Right.
And then you can get into, because we have a battery system in the back that's a Generac battery system. And then what you get into load management, and what happens is that a certain percentage of that battery going down, it starts turning other things off to make those batteries last a little bit longer.
Most
of the time, you're just going to be refrigerator and lights. You know, that's really what you're going to get out the systems. And always compare the new solar systems. Because like I said, there's so many things, so many different companies on the market now. But I compare that to the flat screen TVs when they first came out, right? You know, I mean, you're talking, it's crazy to think that a plasma TV flat screen, it really wasn't flat. You know, I mean, you look at it, it was probably still a, you know, the depth of it was probably a foot in depth. But at the same time, that was $4,000 or $5,000. Now you can go to Walmart and buy a 65-inch TV for $200-something. You know,
right.
So as time goes on, the technology gets better. The cost is going to come down to the consumer. So
now, you talked earlier about all the different brands on the industrial side, and folks were asking, do you repair all the same different brands on the residential side?
We repair everything. So I mean, there's not one brand out there that we can't work on. And as far as, like, even customer support, we've established ourselves to where we might – like Briggs & Stratton, we're not a Briggs & Stratton dealer, but we have a good reputation with Briggs, so we can actually call their tech support. Now we actually hired somebody that has a Briggs certification, so we have a Kohler certification, we have Briggs, we have Generac, so we have different certifications, but there is nothing that we sell that we can't cover warranty on. Let's just put it that way. So everything we sell, we can repair and put warranty. We're not just a, you know, tied to one brand anymore.
And that's both on the industrial and residential side.
Yep, that's correct. On both sides of the business. Yep,
absolutely. The way they operate, very similar, right? As it relates to brand. I mean, there are some differences in the motherboard, I guess, and the electronics and things of that nature.
Yeah, and the parts vary. I mean, like with a control board, I can tell you, I'm not going to name the brands, but there's one brand that might be $1,200 for a control board, but you rarely have issues with those control boards, whereas another brand is middle of the road, it might be $600. Then you have another brand of a residential generator that the control boards are $200 or less. So the ones at $200 or less, that's the ones they're constantly having issues with, so that's why the parts are more available. So, you know, you look at these brands, and, you know, what we look for in the brand is part availability, customer support, you know, and they've been pretty successful with all the residential brands. But, you know, like I said, on the residential side, we are we're Generac on the residential. With our industrial brand, we sell other residential brands as well as other industrial generators as well and commercial.
So. Yeah. I know at one time getting a permit and a lot of those things, there was some tightening of the rules and so forth. In most of the parishes now, how long does it actually take to get through that process?
I can tell you, and I really don't want to get...
You don't have to name them.
I could tell you certain parishes that might take up to a couple months. And there's some parishes that can take 45 minutes and the permit's ready, right? So, but part of that is having the correct information and what's needed, because what happens is that you might have a plan reviewer that's going to review it, and they'll have a stack, and it might take them a week to get to you. And you want to make sure you have all your T's crossed, your I's dot. That way you're not being put on the back burner, because it might be another week before they can look at it, you know. And so we have a lady who is a dedicated she's dedicated to filling out permits. That's her job, is permitting, because there's so many different municipalities that we deal with, and they have different rules, you know. I can tell you right now, like in Kenner, I'll use an example, you know, David Drive, right? You know, one side of David Drive is Kenner, the other side is Jefferson Parish. Two different sets of generator rules. Jefferson Parish is 18 inches from a home, as long as everything meets, you know, the installation guidelines and safe. You know, Kenner and both Jefferson Parish send out inspectors to do a pre-inspection to make sure that the generator is going to go in that spot that we all agree to and it's permitted for. But you go over to Kenner, it's 5 feet from a home. So you have to understand each area. You go across the lake and you get Tangipahoa, they have their own sets of rules. You go to, you know, the city of Gretna, they have their own set of rules, even though it's inside Jefferson Parish. So that is the part of having our salesmen and our team, you know, they're very well versed on permitting and what permits allowed and what restrictions are for each area. You get into HOAs, that's a whole another set of rules. Some HOAs are 10 feet, you know, from property line. So, you know, you run into these different challenges. The variance process now, over the years, we noticed is that they're getting a lot stricter and they're getting tighter. Like, you know, back years ago, you were able to put it between you and your neighbor's home. That's not allowed anymore because of carbon monoxide that can get into the neighbor's house. You know, so not only when you're planning these jobs out, you know, not only you're at the home of a potential customer, you have to look at the neighbors. You know, you go in St. Charles Parish, you can't have, even though you could have a home that's 20 feet away from the home that you're looking at, you can't have the generator turn that direction where the exhaust would go toward a home that's 20 feet away. So there are different guidelines for each area. So that's the part of having someone. And look, you got to have somebody that's licensed and insured when it comes to this business. I mean, you know, years ago, you know, when we were younger, you know, you'd put these in, you know, next to somebody's, you know, you put it in a house, you didn't fill permits out. And, you know, going back 10, 15 years, and, you know, those rules now are so stringent now that, you know, in the liability that you put yourself out, that you have to follow these rules. There's no choice. It's easy to follow the rules.
And a lot
now.
Of people don't realize there's an electrical side to this and a plumbing side to this.
There is both.
And then also kind of a foundation side to it, depending on the size of the generator and the platform that's going to support same.
Yeah, right? So FEMA flood elevations now. So some areas are requiring FEMA flood elevations prior to install, or it's part of the checklist, you know. So We're seeing that now. You're starting to see Jefferson Parish. Matter of fact, we just had Dan Mills of the Home Builders Association over here, and you know, we were talking about some of the rule changes and things like that. And that's the best part about being a member of the Home Builders Association is that, you know, they're out there listening to the different parishes, understanding their rules, and they're bringing it back to their members of, you know, potential changes. And we actually can voice our opinion with the Home Builders Association, and they go back to that municipality and express the concerns of, you know, licensed contractors of what concerns they have, whether it's different rule changes. So, you know, being part of these different organizations helps us out as a business and helps the, you know, protect the homeowner as well. So, and that's the goal in this.
And the reason I ask these questions is there's a lot of complexity to it. So you want to have somebody that has actually installed in all of these jurisdictions, because that's the best way to get to know the rules, right?
Yeah, and so certain areas have more stringent rules than other places, right? So what we do is we just adopt whoever has the most strictest rule out there. That's the standard for us. And, you know, you can go in some areas where, you know, the rules as far as like two ground rods, you know, CO monitors, which have to be in every home now, but even with the e-stop buttons now, if you have a generator that's in the backyard, the transfer switches in the, you know, by the electrical, which is by the front of the house, and you have a gate and that gate's locked, and let's say there is a call from the fire department, you know, it's the fire department for some type of fire, you know, maybe a structural fire where they need to shut that generator down, and they, you know, they'd have to try to, you know, knock down the gate, try to cut locks, where now you can just walk up and hit an emergency stop switch and it shuts that generator down immediately. So, you know, having those rules in place and understanding them, and you know, when a different municipality comes up with something that's a little more stringent, well, then that's our standard now, because you don't want to be in an area that you're 45 minutes away from our shop in Kenner, and all of a sudden, hey, we need an extra ground rod. You know, so it's just easier for us just to say, hey, we're just going to make it standard across the board, and that's what we do. So,
and obviously, they adopt these provisions for safety reasons and otherwise, and if you adopt that standard, you know that you're at the highest standard available.
Right? Yeah, and look, as we learn these rules, you know, we work with the fire department right here in Kenner. I think we trained over 120, maybe 150 firemen over 3 days. We did training in the morning and in the afternoon of generator safety, solar panel safety, electrical safety, right? So, and we did these courses at no cost. And you know, if anyone's listening from any other fire departments, give us a call and we'll come by with our demonstration trailer. We'll come by, give you, you know, go through these classes, and it's no cost. You know, for us, we want to be the subject matter experts, but we also want the safety side of this business as well. We just don't want to be out. We don't want to be just salesmen, right? We want to sell a piece of equipment, but we also want to bring a lot along with it. That's the safety side of this equipment. You know, whereas these, you know, first responders are out there. You know, how easy is it for them to walk up and just hit an emergency stop? Before, what they were doing was that they'd have to go to the gas meter, locate it, shut the gas off, and then wait for that generator to turn off. You know, and you're probably talking additional 15 seconds for that line to run out, whereas when you hit that e-stop switch, it's immediate. So, and that's what we're teaching firefighters, that, you know, what the switches look like. And even our demonstration trailer, we have an e-stop switch in there that you can actually hit and shut that generator
down. Got a number of texts asking for your phone number, 504-677-1023, here at Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. Craig, thank you so much for hosting us today. This has been great, and thank you so much for what you do. You've been a great corporate partner. I mean, and as you just described, a lot of what it is that you do, that's really over and above, you know, when you're training firefighters. You understand and recognize the challenges that they all face. Generators are an up-and-coming thing, and you want to make them as safe as possible, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with firefighters and first responders, I mean, you know, usually the firefighters are the first ones on the scene most of the time. So they got to secure that area. And you know, those guys, I mean, some of the firefighters didn't realize that, hey, if it's during the day and you have wires that are hanging off a solar panel, those are actually live wires. Mm-hmm. You can get electrocuted from it. They didn't realize that. They thought, hey, I go pull this disconnect, it shuts down the system. No, you still have everything that's upstream of that. So that's why we, you know, that was one of the eye-open things for us. But then we also, during our training classes, we have pictures of really bad installs that we went back and corrected over the years. And we show those firefighters these pictures, because at the end of the day, if they're at a call and they're sitting there, so we tell the guys, look, if you're sitting there and you're looking at this house next door and the generator's facing less than 5 feet from a window or door, that might be your next call for carbon monoxide poison. So, you know, maybe knock on the door and talk to the homeowner or go to, you know, the city of Kenner or whoever it is and you know, get the building inspector out there. Because, look, these homeowners, you know, you're not going to blame the homeowners. The homeowners are going to go based on what the recommendation is of the installer.
The installer,
and
absolutely.
That's where we, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, even though we represent Generac and other brands, but at the end of the day, we represent the community and we want other people. You know, we have a training area in the back that we offer classes to our contractors. So we actually sell generators. We're a one-stop shop for contractors. That's something that over the next few months we're going to have an order form that contractors come in. They can buy everything from gas fittings, you know, electrical, you know, from the wire to the generators, the stands. Everything can go with it. But also what goes with that is if they have questions or concerns, we have that training area in the back, and we walk them through how to hook up these e-stop switches, how to wire in the transfer switches, whatever information they need, because we want these contractors to be out there working safe but also protecting our community, you know. And that's the thing. Is one thing I've learned with this business is that if we help our competitors grow, we grow as a business. It's not, you know, the days of just, you know, putting yourself on an island. You can do that, but you're not going to grow. For us, it's to see quality jobs that are going out there and knowing people say, hey, I got this equipment from Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. Because, look, we can't put in every unit. But if we can get a piece of it, I'm good with that. Whether it's a service, repairs, or selling equipment, I'm good with that.
Well, I love the approach because it's all about safety first.
Yep.
Again, thank you so much for hosting us today. We had a great time. Really enjoy it, as always. And we hope to be back for you, certainly. Craig Giacomine with Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, 504-627-1023. If you want to give them a call, and they will come out. We'll be right back. We'll check in with Scoot when we come back. Stay with us. Free for all Friday, and Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
We will talk about some of the things that might come up in the new Trump administration. We will talk about Thursday night football last night, and also it's a big weekend for football. LSU plays Alabama at Tiger Stadium. It doesn't get more iconic than that. And then also we'll talk a little bit about the difference between LSU fans and Alabama fans. And there are some distinct differences. Also, I would think that a lot of Saints fans sold their Saints tickets. And I'm thinking that there are going to be a lot of Falcons fans in the Dome Sunday because their team is winning and their team is at the top of the division. So, you know, we need to talk about what happens when children encounter these Falcons fans and they see them together holding hands and, you know, you might see Falcons fans kissing each other, and I know it's an abomination. We'll talk about all of this on the show. We've talked about it before, but we just need to warn people that, you know, Falcons fans, they can't help it. I mean, they were born that way. Nobody would choose that lifestyle. So we'll get into that this afternoon as well. Have a great weekend.
Sounds like a great lineup coming your way, folks. Stay tuned. Scoot's up next. Have a great weekend. We'll see you guys on Monday.